This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Voters in Cincinnati have re-elected John Cranley as mayor. What's ahead for the city?
The next is to continue to reduce poverty, to improve safety, to add more jobs, to improve public transportation, to deal with the heroin crisis. We're moving in the right direction, but we got a lot of work to do, and I can't wait to do it.
In conceding the race, Councilmember Yvette Simpson had this message for City Council.
I'm counting on you to make sure you raise the issues. You're going to make sure you represent everyone and make sure that over the next 4 years, we don't lose ground in making sure that every Cincinnatian has a better life and a better living.
Meantime, there are three new members of Cincinnati City Council, and Ohio voters passed Issue 1 to expand the rights of crime victims. They rejected Issue 2, the Drug Price Relief Act. And joining us to analyze the results of yesterday's election are WCPO.com government and political reporter Amanda Seitz, Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wederick, WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson, and WVXU City Hall reporter Jay Hanselman. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And good to see everybody this afternoon. Is everybody wide awake after
a little house here?
A little sleepy.
A little sleepy, I can imagine. Now, John Cranley wins another 4 years as mayor. He bested Yvette Simpson 54-46 after losing that three-way primary to her by 11%. What made the difference for him? He's calling himself the comeback kid. So what mounted that comeback for him?
Well, he's totally right about that. I think he told Simpson in the concession call that they had that, you know, Yvette, you had me on the run. And I think she did. But the fact of the matter is, I talked with voters all day yesterday. And the thing that I noticed immediately was that there were many, many, many African-American males who said that they voted for the mayor. And she was just unable to, you know, get the parts of her base that she needed to vote for her to really have a chance at pushing over the finish line, I think.
That was really reflected in the vote in some places like Bond Hill.
Yeah.
Roselawn, some of the other African-American neighborhoods where he was not expected to do very well. But he outperformed the expectations by quite a bit. And suddenly there were white conservative Republicans in places like Covedale and West Price Hill suddenly decided to show up.
Right, right. He did a lot better in his own neighborhoods, I think, the neighborhoods that are associated with him. Like He won West Price Hill in the primary 55%. Yesterday he had over 70% of yeah. West Price Hill. So,
and the turnout in the spring was just negligible.
Right.
Yeah, the turnout in neighborhoods that favor John Cranley was just it reached up to like 45% in Hyde Park, Mount Lookout, and he was winning 80% of the vote there. And then we looked this morning at Avondale, which theoretically here Yvette Simpson put her neck out on the line for with the Children's Hospital expansion, and turnout was only at 15%. I looked at one Winton Hills polling location that only 40 voters showed up. So there were her voters were just not showing up yesterday.
And I think the primary, and he said this last night, essentially after the primary, he blew up his campaign. He changed staff. He made the difficult decision to release Jay Kincaid as his campaign manager, who had been with him in 2013, and the number of TV spots that they ran in May didn't work, and it had to be, I think as Howard was talking about last week on this program, wholesale politics. People wanted to see them, and so they went away from TV ads and knocked on a lot of doors and put together a more of a grassroots campaign than what they did in May.
The numbers were staggering on that, too. They targeted 100,000 voters yeah. at the doorsteps. The mayor knocked on, he estimated, about 3,000 doors himself, which is, you know, that's over the period of between May and yesterday. So that's a lot of doors.
And they did that, and they followed up. They right. followed up. They didn't just knock once. They came back and said, hey, you know, you are going to vote, aren't you? You told us you're going to vote, so, you know, make sure you do.
And I think that was particularly important for John to knock those doors, because the biggest criticism, really, of him throughout this campaign was that no one can work with him. He's not personable. He has this abrasive personality. And if he's going to voters' doors, having a conversation with him, that could have really helped him win over some voters there. I really think it did.
I also got the sense that Simpson's campaign relied a lot more on phone calls, mm-hmm. and that's just yeah. you know, when you got somebody on the phone, I mean, their volunteers were saying things like, "And I, you know, all the people I called last night, 75% said they were voting for a vet." Well, people can lie to you on the phone, and it's a little harder right. to do face to face,
especially if they want to get off and make dinner or something. Right.
And I got a couple of text messages from groups that were supporting Yvette Simpson. You know. Which, you know, you just totally ignore. I mean, you say, what, get this off my phone.
Delete.
Right.
I guess one thing that is, and I'll think others can weigh in too, I was surprised by the margin. I thought it might be just a little bit closer.
Yeah, I think a lot of us did, Jay.
And I was led to believe mm-hmm. it could be like as close as like 51, 49, 58, or 52 to 48, that the margin would be a lot closer than it ended up being at 8 points.
Yeah,
we had
Howard
several discussions where we were saying this, Amanda, that we thought this would be a really close race.
Yeah, Howard and I were just talking about that before the show started, and I did not hear a single person go, gee, I really think John Cranley's going to win by a big margin. I heard people say, I could see Yvette Simpson pulling off another big margin, or I could see it being really close. But no one was saying it's going to be a big win for him.
Amanda did hit the key on a lot of this when you talk about the places where Yvette Simpson should have done very well and should have turned out voters and did not. They just did not come out.
And in the swing neighborhoods, too, we took a look at like Pleasant Ridge this morning, for example. Right. It was a dead heat. You had 4 or 5 votes dividing them in a lot of cases. So she didn't make up big margins there either, or put a big divide between the two.
She won some of those neighborhoods, but the fact that it wasn't backed up by her base, it just didn't work for her, you know. And you know, I was staying out in Bond Hill and it was raining and there was nobody showing up. And I was like, well, I don't know if the rain's a factor here or not, but turnout this morning, I think, was, 27 or 28% overall in the city, which was less than it was 4 years ago. And this was a more contentious, believe it or not, somehow more contentious than 13.
What's it usually run, Chris? A little over 30%?
It's hovered around 30%. In 2013, it was 29%, I believe. So it was 2 percentage points lower this year.
And, you know, I always find that interesting. I think it was former House Speaker Tip O'Neill that said all politics is local. Mm-hmm. And you have 30% turnout for local elections, but then upwards of north of 40 to 50% for national elections. Right. And the local elections
70%.
Are... 70%. Yeah. And the local elections are closer to you, and that's the people that are providing you your trash service and your police service and your fire service. And yet 70% of the people chose not to participate.
I also think that the messages of both campaigns, I kind of challenge anybody to say, what were those candidates going to do different in the next four years? John's answer was more jobs, more economic development, less poverty, you know.
Of what we've done.
Right. And Simpson, you know, she would talk about the best urban city in the country. Well, what does that really mean? She had a little bit below that, you know, if you dug a little deeper, but it did not resonate with anyone, and I don't think the messaging was blowing anybody away.
No really clear messages from either one of these candidates. I mean, it was very difficult. You know, Simpson talked—
And they really didn't have a lot of differences mm-hmm. either.
But they were nuanced. Were very nuanced differences, and you had to pay very close attention to pick them up.
That's something, too, when we were out talking to voters yesterday, and of course, hindsight is 2020, so now this makes a little more sense this morning, but we heard people say, I'm voting for Yvette Simpson, but actually, I don't think John's done that bad of a job. And it just kind of shows, even people who were voting for her kind of gave him somewhat of a tepid endorsement in during the process.
I totally agree with that. I mean, I have people tell me, you know, I kind of liked her, but why would I get rid of the mayor? He's doing a fine job. Nobody was really worked up about this the way that they're core supporters were.
If I can ask a question, Cranley blew up the campaign, pivoted, made it more grassroots, talked to people on their doorstep. Do you expect that same kind of pivot now at City Hall, that there might be a kindler, gentler,
an evolving
Cranley
John Cranley
in the first floor of the
we'll find out in
City Hall?
Yeah, 45 minutes.
I'd love to. I think
that maybe for the next 2 hours.
I think it's going to largely depend on the council, right?
Right.
You know, you got, if you think about it, Greg Landsman basically replaced Kevin Flynn. Jeff Pastor basically replaced Charlie Winburn. And Tamaya Denard basically replaced Yvette Simpson. And, you know, if you don't know the background of those candidates, I would say Landsman is quite a bit more liberal than Kevin Flynn is. And but he's also a guy that has a reputation of working with everybody, or at least that's his MO anyway.
Yeah.
But I don't know that he's necessarily going to accept freezing out some of those Democrats on council like Chris Seelbach, who have warred with the mayor, and I expect will kind of continue to do that. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how he and P.G. Sittenfeld, who finished first in the council race, got more votes than the mayor for the second time. You know, how will they react to this?
I see Denard as kind of a free agent, you know, on a whole lot of things. I mean, nobody's going to tell, you know, tell her what to do. I mean, just not.
I agree. And I actually talked to all three candidates last night, and they really talked about how, of course, this is feel-good election night talk, but they talked about how they really can see themselves working together. I don't think Tamaya will be as harsh against John necessarily. She really touted herself as a pro-business council candidate, but also working on things like poverty issues that, like you said, Yvette has worked on too. So I kind of see her potentially working pretty well with the mayor she didn't endorse in the election.
Yeah, either. Denard really fascinates me, you know, because she got, you know, a very high rating from a Cincinnati USA chamber on her positions on the issues they're interested in. At the same time, she got the endorsement of Our Revolution, the Bernie Sanders organization. I mean, that is a pretty wide gulf.
Yeah.
And, you know, they both had good reasons to endorse her.
Tamaya's kind of like her boss, P.G. Sittenfeld.
Yeah, yeah.
Or her former boss.
Former boss.
Excuse me.
Right. She has no boss now.
No boss now except the people.
Right. Well, and I think if something that we have to put an asterisk by this, though, we're assuming that the nine council members on paper right now will be the nine council members in 2 weeks from now. There is the possibility that the ninth position could switch.
The one the pastor won, right?
Right. And, you know, if that were to switch, then the dynamic of council would be...
changed a little bit.
Seven Democrats, one Republican, and one independent.
How many votes separated number nine from number three?
317. Or okay. 321.
Yeah.
And there are about 1,600 provisional ballots.
1,700.
But Sherry told me this morning 1,100.
Oh,
well,
really?
Okay. Here's what I just got this from the Board of Elections. And if you take the early voting provisionals, the election day provisionals, and the ones that were unscanned on election day in the city of Cincinnati, 1,635.
Oh, okay.
Now, I was also told that that number could change.
Right.
That's kind of, you know,
it seems
so
like it has changed
kind of, right.
throughout the evening.
So, but that's the number they're going with now in terms of the city of Cincinnati, 1,635 ballots that have yet to be counted.
So and some of those are not provisionals.
They were unscanned on election day. Maybe the scanner broke for 5 minutes or
something. So what happens, Howard? So we have an official count coming out. If it remains 300 votes or fewer, they would have a recount at that point?
Well, it's whatever. Recount. It's one half of 1%.
Yeah, only if it's below one half of 1% is an automatic recount.
And I believe I saw on Facebook this morning that Michelle Dillingham had said if it was 100 votes or less that she would ask.
You saw that in my story, didn't you?
Yeah. I saw it on Facebook.
Let's take a quick break here.
Okay, well.
I think that what Howard just said there about it is really significant because, you know, 1,100 or so provisionals, those won't necessarily all be counted, but the 500 regular ballots, those will all be counted.
Absolutely.
Let's take a break here, Chris, okay?
Sure.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. And joining us to analyze the results of yesterday's election are WCPO.com government and political reporter Amanda Seitz, Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wetterich, WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson, and WVXU City Hall reporter Jay Hanselman. Jay, I'm wondering, what's next for Yvette Simpson?
She said she was going to stay involved, said that she was going to, and I wasn't at her event, so I'm relying on what I heard, that she is going to take a vacation, and I think her term was to prayerfully consider what she's going to do next, but she did say that she was going to stay involved.
Yeah. Can she run for council again in, what, 4 years?
Sure.
Or mayor.
Okay. Or mayor again.
Right.
Yeah. And if there
were... she could have a state rep job that might come open or something. You know,
and I mean, if there were to be an opening on council, if somebody didn't complete their term, she could well be appointed as a council member again.
Who might that be?
Yeah.
And I know it's always our job to tease things out, but I really think 2021 is going to be the election, because you're going to have six incumbents on city council who are term limited, so they can't run again.
And that's because of the change they made in, what was it, 2012? They went to four-year terms.
Right. Four-year terms, unstaggered, and that's why we're going to have this 3-6-3-6 pattern from now until the end of time.
Oh no!
until they change it again.
And then you throw in that, and you throw in
which they will,
and you throw in the mayor is term limited too. So you would have a new mayor, and
already P.G. Sittenfeld, Christopher Smitherman have raised the. They're interested in running.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. Christopher Smitherman was really hoping for a third-place finish last night, so I don't know if that sways his decision.
Where did he come in, Amanda?
He was number five, correct? Six was Tamiya Denard, so he was number five. So performed a little weaker than I think he was hoping, but still a very safe seat on council. So it could be a pretty wild race for sure.
But he was down, about 12,000 votes less than PG.
Yeah.
And with six councils, how many of those six will still be around in 2021? I'd say the chances are that some of them will leave early. If they leave before June the 1st of 2019, there would have to be a special election in 2019. So my guess is that if there were anybody departing early, it would be after June the 1st of 2019, so that they would just be an appointment and then would run for the full seat when the election comes up in 2021.
And there has been concern about, Wendell Young's health, and that's what we were kind of alluding to earlier. And so, there's speculation that, he could be one of those that leaves early at some point. And who replaces him, that would be, a great political parlor game, I think. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there are going to be all kinds of questions that normally we would have the answers to by December the 1st, but this will be the first year that the council swearing in will be on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in January. So the council members have an extra 30 days plus in office, so we'll have to wait longer to see what the council committees will be. Mm-hmm. The mayor will appoint chairs for those committees. The biggie will, of course, be the Budget and Finance Committee. There's speculation that Councilmember Smitherman had expressed interest in being the chair of Budget and Finance. Councilmember Amy Murray mm-hmm. is currently the vice chair of that committee. And then we'll see, if some of the newcomers, if they get committee assignments, what those might be. Chairmanships of the committees, what those might be.
Yeah. Smitherman told me straight out that Budget and Finance is what he wants. He'll do whatever the mayor asks him to do, but he wants Budget and Finance.
And everybody's on Budget and Finance, too, so that's that's a significant part of this. And Smitherman was one of two council members that formally endorsed the mayor. The other was Vice Mayor David Mann, who I would expect will continue to be the vice mayor. So I would expect one of those two to get Budget and Finance, but my money would be on Smitherman as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Then the interesting thing would be that Smitherman has been the chair of Law and Public Safety. Then who would take over Law and Public Safety?
So on council, we have the six incumbents reelected. We have three new members. I know Chris touched on the names of the new members earlier. Can somebody tell me a little bit more about the three new folks who are on council?
Yeah, so we have two Democrats, Tamiya Denard, Greg Lantzman, and then also Republican Jeff Pastor, who he's about 300 votes. I think we talked about this. 300 votes separate him and Michelle Dillingham from that ninth place
for that finish. Ninth place seat.
So there's some question as to whether that will remain. What I found interesting about all these candidates was that they really reached. They didn't just campaign for the Democratic vote, for example, or the Republican vote. You saw Jeff. He got the Republican endorsement, but he did extremely well in precincts where Wendell Young was the top vote getter. He was out. He had Charlie Winburn running ads for him on the radio that were geared towards African-American voters. So he got a really big cross-section of voters there. And same with Tamiya Denard. Their campaign told me early on that she was not going to be afraid to try and get Republican voters, moderate Democrats, Republican-leaning voters. So she really worked across section there, too, as well, picking up Democrat Democratic voters and Republican voters throughout the city. And Greg Landsman, of course, working on the Cincinnati Preschool Promise, has a pretty – he really worked the business community to get on board with that. So he, again, has that Democratic background, is liberal, but also brought in some people from the business community given his background too.
I think Chris tweeted this morning. I was a little surprised, I think as Chris was, that I thought Lori Quinlivan and Derek Bauman would finish a little bit higher than they did. I actually in my handicap, I kind of thought that Lori Quinlivan would have been in that 8th or 9th spot and actually be back on council.
I wasn't convinced. Derek Bauman, I mean, in some ways is a very good candidate. Lori, you know, she's had experience on city council, but they're both kind of one-trick ponies. Mm-hmm. You know, they had, Derek had his transportation issues. She has her green initiative, you know, and there wasn't a whole lot else to their campaigns.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what I found interesting, too, about the ones that did finish, is they didn't just stick to
one subject. Yeah.
They really were out working a lot of people in the city.
Did any of the three new council members come from a neighborhood that's not yet represented?
Tamaya's from
Camp Washington.
I thought it was College Hill.
No, originally, she's from College Hill. She lives in Camp Washington now.
And Greg is from Mount Washington. Is that correct?
Yes.
The west side of the east side.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Exactly.
And Jeff's neighborhood eludes me right now. Does anyone else remember?
I don't know where Jeff came from. Does anyone?
I think one thing that'll also bear watching as we go forward is how much longer Harry Black will be the city manager. Hmm. I don't anticipate he will be here a full 4 years, because I think there has been, at least inside City Hall, there has been some documented tension between the city manager's suite and the mayor's suite. And
But the mayor said that he loves Harry Black and is going to keep him forever.
Well, the mayor may love Harry Black, but Harry may be looking out for, you know, what comes next. And I'm not saying he'll be departing immediately, but I think that could be a change.
You think it could?
I think that'll be a change
before
2021.
Yeah, he might be preparing his resume for
other opportunities.
What's the first city council meeting? You know, we've got one coming up at 2:00. What is that first city council meeting like?
Awkward.
The day after an election?
It'll be awkward. And I think this time, as far as I know, this is the first time. And Howard can correct me, but I think this is the first time we actually have the two challengers for mayor in the same room at a council meeting, because any other time it's been either an incumbent mayor and someone from the outside.
Right.
But this time both come from inside. And I'm sure it will be handled with grace. I'm sure there'll be plenty of speechifying. I joked, I think there's like 6 items on the agenda. It should take 5 minutes at the most.
But they're usually on their best behavior in these things.
But I'm sure it'll probably be an hour, hour and a half.
Yeah, they all know that the cameras are watching them and they can get their soundbite in, and this is kind of their last chance to do that before, you know.
It'll be the first time in a while, though, after a couple elections, where we won't have to hear Charlie Winburn tell us where he finished in the race.
Yeah.
Usually likes to harp on that a couple of different times.
I think maybe some other council members might bring that up there today to fill in.
So what are the issues that the Cranley administration, that city council, what are they going to be focused on? Do we have a sense of that?
I would think that the first thing they're going to have to do is to get this MSD agreement nailed down. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a letter in principle. The county and the city agree this is how we want to do it. I think the commissioners hired a consulting firm this morning during their meeting to kind of guide the process as you transition MSD from the city to the county. But the big hurdle I think they've still got to overcome is this needs approval from the state legislature, especially when it comes to the pension plan, for MSD employees to remain in the city's pension system rather than transferring over to OPERS like most of the county employees. And that's far from a done deal. And the clock is ticking, because that agreement expires, I believe, in April of next year. And again, they've got an agreement in principle between themselves, but now they got to get the third-party buy-in from the state legislature.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see an FC Cincinnati Stadium deal come up.
You saw that on my list there, didn't you?
Well, it's just that's what everyone's been talking about, is that they're waiting after the election. The other thing, too, is I feel like John Cranley has to address transportation somehow. He just really nailed Yvette on not coming up with a plan for that and that he had the vision for that. So if he were not to follow through on creating some solutions in the city for our problems with the bus system, I think that would be a failure in his first couple years.
It will be interesting, too. I think in the month of December, since the city is on a fiscal year that starts on July the 1st, they have to submit what they call a tentative tax budget to the county auditor's office. So basically, that's when they decide what the property tax millage will be for that fiscal year that starts on July 1st of next year. It'll be interesting to see. Normally, they do that in December, and it would be interesting to see if they can hold that off, if they'll try to go ahead and do that in December, or if they'll wait for the new council to be seated and then take that up in January. I know it has to be into the auditor's office in January. I'm just not sure when.
I think the budget is a huge challenge for them. You know, the last fiscal year's budget was not structurally balanced. It was balanced by law, but revenues did not equal spending. And so, you know, I think Harry Black said that we were within inches of needing layoffs. And so,
I believe it was a millimeter, maybe.
You're right, it was a millimeter. So they're going to need to have some a rabbit somewhere and to pull out of a hat.
And even as it stands right now, I think the deficit's already, what, $20 million?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We tried to ask John about that at our debate, too. And, of course, it could have been used against him as seen as trying to increase taxes. But he said, oh, no, we don't need any new revenues in the city.
I remember that.
And that's not what a city manager is telling him. Hmm. I mean, and the fact is they do have a hole and they don't have any money to make up that hole.
Howard, we had a school board election. What were the results there?
Well, the results there, I mean, we're going to have a difficult time at the – there were four elected. Erica Copeland Dansby, the incumbent. Ryan Messer, who was running for the first time, an activist, a big streetcar advocate. He was the top vote getter. Then you had Dansby. And then you had Mike Murawski, who has become rather famous around town as an activist. And then Melanie Bates, the incumbent, she is running only 100 votes ahead of Renee Hevia, who was a first-time candidate. And that race is probably going to be decided by provisional ballots, too. And we're not going to know for a few weeks. The Board of Elections is going to certify the results of this election on November 22nd. So it will be at least until then whether we know there are going to be any automatic recounts. And there could be an automatic recount, especially in the school board race, with that small of a difference.
And Amanda, on the state issues, issue one passed by, what was it, 80-some percent, I think, 83% is what I heard.
It was overwhelming.
It was overwhelming.
One was overwhelmingly approved, and the other two was overwhelmingly
dropped.
Yes, yeah, that was a lot of heavy hitters came out for issue two.
Anybody surprised by the results?
No, not a bit.
I think issue two, what I heard consistently from people was it's so confusing, and voters don't want to vote for something that they don't know what they're voting for. Same with council. You know, that's why people don't finish their ballots on council, is because if they don't know what candidates they're voting for, they don't want to vote for someone. If they don't know what the issue says and they can't decipher it, they don't want to vote for it.
Well, thanks to all of you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
WCPO.com government and political reporter Amanda Seitz, Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wedrick, WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson, and WVXU City Hall reporter Jay Hanselman.